We're back on the road with our 7th live taping episode, this time up in Spartanburg in the shadow of the Denny's building. It's basically like their Tower of Barad-dûr. So for this episode, we taped in front of a crowd of dedicated leaders at Growler House in Spartanburg last Thursday. And if you missed it, don't worry, because guess what? We are planning additional live tapings. We already have one we're planning for January 9th in the Columbia area. So go ahead and mark your calendars now. We'll get you some more details soon. And if you want us to come to your area, let us know. We already got some rumblings on Twitter about Sumter, so be on the lookout, folks. Now, without further ado, the lead. Roll that beautiful bean footage. Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of November 19th, 2019. And we're taping live in front of a rowdy audience here at Growler House in Spartanburg. Hey, Spartanburg! Pretty rowdy. Mark Sanford has just ended his long-shot bid for president. So what now? Does the comeback kid have another political comeback in him? Also, South Carolina again has a budget surplus. This time it's $2 billion. Where's all that gonna go? And we take a look at Nikki Haley's new book. Interact with us on Twitter or Instagram at SC Lead Pod about your thoughts on this episode. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue. There we go. We got some whoop cracks out there and a chaser of trivia. Now, make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes, where you can also rate and review us. We're also everywhere podcasts are, including NPR One. Now, you can listen to all four sections of the podcast while you take a break from the impeachment hearings. Just kidding. Tune in to ETV. You can watch it all, gavel to gavel. Or instead of wondering if there's a Stranger Things scenario happening in the bottom of the Denny's corporate headquarters here in Spartanburg. Have you seen this building? It's like the brutalest building in the upstate. You gotta check it out. Google that and tell me otherwise. And now for our brief quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present. But here on the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, WIS reports that hate crimes have increased in South Carolina from 2017 to 2018, this according to the FBI, and despite a decrease nationwide. There were 87 reported hate crimes in 2017, which increased to 111 in 2018. The report also shows a majority of the hate crimes reported were motivated by race. But there were also reported crimes based on religion, sexual orientation, gender identity, and disability. Number two, mini campaign trail. Since we don't have one this episode, here's a little mini one. The Associated Press reports that Senator Bernie Sanders announced that Jessica Bright will now lead his campaign in South Carolina, replacing Quajo Campbell, a former member of the Charleston City Council. Bright has been Sanders' deputy state director and previously was political director for Democrat Joe Cunningham. The campaign provided no details on Campbell's departure. And the Post and Courier reports that Mayor Pete Buttigieg is ruling out a $2 million ad buy in South Carolina. Number three, the Greenville News reports that Jesse Osborne, the Townville Elementary School shooter, was sentenced to life in prison. Judge Lawton McIntosh handed down the sentence in Anderson after heart-wrenching statements from family members of Jacob Hall, the six-year-old who Osborne mortally wounded on a playground. Osborne could not face the death penalty because he was 14 at the time of the crime. He pleaded guilty in December 2018 to killing his father and Jacob, and to attempted murder relating to trying to kill other students and a teacher on the playground in September 2016. And number four, the state newspaper reports that Heath Hill, the former chairman of Tri-County Electric Cooperative in St. Matthews, was indicted on 5 charges of misconduct in office and using his position to obtain hundreds of thousands of dollars in free or discounted electric service for himself and his family. And he also improperly secured an $80,000 cash payout from the co-op. The indictment echoes a series of stories the state newspaper published last year that revealed problems at Tri-County Electric, a not-for-profit power company that serves 13,600 customers in 6 Midlands counties. And now for our Florida Man News segment. Every week we give you a taste, just a headline of the most captivating Florida Man news. Headline: Florida man on probation burglarizes probation office. And just like a Demogorgon downing a bunch of Grand Slams and Denny's in Spartanburg, we bury the lead. Our podcast is one giant flat circle. Like time. Yes, it's been a busy few days with the impeachment hearing starting, but the campaign trail stops for no one. We got folks jumping in or thinking about jumping in the race or dropping out, like former Congressman Mark Sanford, and ending his long shot bid for the White House just days after he moved his campaign to New Hampshire. Speaking of pondering former governors and their political futures, Nikki Haley's new book just came out, and we get a glimpse into the most trying moments of her governorship, the 2016 campaign trail, life as the UN ambassador, and we're still left wondering what her next move will be. 2024. And South Carolina lawmakers are salivating at the news that they'll have another surplus, about $2 billion extra. That's a lot. That's double than what lawmakers had last year, and that will lead to some fun come session in January. I know that for sure. So joining me here in Spartanburg are political reporters Jamie Lovegrove with the Post and Courier and Mayan Schechter with the State Newspaper. Welcome to Spartanburg, guys.
Thank you.
These people are here to see you.
Hub City.
It's like a little Greenwood deja vu, right?
A little bit, yeah.
So Jamie, I kind of want to start off with Mark Sanford. If you remember, if we go all the way back like some 65 days, I think it was, Labor Day weekend, that's when Mark Sanford was going to announce his campaign, but Hurricane Dorian was threatening the coast, so he decided not to. So start off with one storm, and now apparently it's ending because of another storm called the impeachment. So
that's what he says. Yes.
Is that really the case, or were people just not paying enough attention to Mark Sanford despite it being such a long shot bid? I mean, my gosh, it was hard enough.
Right. And of course, the reason why they weren't paying that much attention was because of how long the odds were and because President Trump remains widely popular among the Republican base. Sanford said that impeachment had sucked all of the oxygen out of the room, but there really was not much oxygen there to begin with.
Cable news.
Cable news was, you know, something that he could get on every now and then. He got on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. Mm-hmm. He got a couple, you know, media appearances here and there. And yeah, I'm not surprised if cable news schedules have been pretty booked up over the last few weeks as this impeachment inquiry gets underway. But there was never a opening here. He acknowledged from the get-go that he seemed to understand how long the odds were for this. But yeah, it did make it a little harder. You know, what's just hard to figure out after this week is that, yes, impeachment has moved along, but other than that, we're in the same situation we were 65 days ago when he got into the race. It doesn't really feel like anything has fundamentally changed about the politics of the situation, and yet he has decided to drop out. He didn't wait until, you know, the lawsuit results over the South Carolina primary, which could have changed the game for him a little bit. But so we are left with Joe Walsh and Bill Weld in the Republican primary there, and I don't expect it to be very competitive.
Well, and Mayan, you guys were both at Jeff Duncan's barbecue. Remember when all these big Republican events in South Carolina, and they were just shouting at him, "Don't run!"
Like into the storm.
It was kind of bizarre. I mean, to see the response from people. I mean, I think that it was clear probably to Mark Sanford at that point, if it had not been clear before then, that he probably wasn't going to get a whole lot of support within his home state, which, like Jamie said, has been widely supportive, the Republican Party, widely supportive of Donald Trump. But yeah, that was like really interesting to watch, considering this was their former governor.
Yeah, and we saw that the Silver Elephant, like all these big events in the state GOP, and it's just like, hey.
If anything, the only warm reception I saw him get in South Carolina was at the Galvin's Ferry Stump, which was a Democratic event.
That's right.
He just kind of hung out back there, yeah.
It was incredibly popular.
He
at that
showed
event.
Up.
Amy Klobuchar call him out too?
Right, yeah. I don't think she realized he was there.
I don't think a lot of people did. But at the same time, So it was more like a David versus Goliath situation. We knew that from the get-go. Some people kind of saw it as a vanity project. Our good friend Meg Kennard wrote kind of a little bit when she first had that story out, talking about this, that it was kind of a very long shot. What's Mark doing here, trying to maybe set up his political future, which we'll now see what that's going to be. But Jamie, your colleague, our good friend of the pod, Caitlin Birds up in New Hampshire, was up in New Hampshire when this news came out. She had the scoop breaking the story that he was running for president.
Right.
Anything from her and her reporting from up in New Hampshire that we can take away from what's going on?
Well, based on all reports, it seems like it's very cold up there.
It's cold.
Mark Sanford was all jacketed up as he made his announcement that he was dropping out. You know, obviously we're taping this on Thursday. I know she's working on a longer story about his bid for this weekend. Pick up the Sunday Post and Courier.
Yeah, you'll be reading about it.
But, you know, this whole, you know, run featured several pretty humiliating moments. There was that story of him kicking off a road trip across the country in Philadelphia with a kickoff event, and one person showed up.
It was a reporter, right? It was a reporter.
I think it's pretty when Arby's is tweeting.
Oh, the Arby's. Oh, God, R.I.P. Yeah. That was some highlight. That was some high attention right there. Right. Yeah.
You know, as Scott English, Mark Sanford's former chiefs of staff, you know, like to talk about, they'd have a director of gimmicks, and there does not seem to be, I think Mark Sanford was his own director of gimmicks in this campaign.
You know, at one point I was thinking about having a Scott English corner on the campaign trail, just so we could have like the weekly update about what's going on with Mark Sanford. That never took off, and now it's never going to happen.
Tweets.
Right, he gave some good analysis, on the race.
And then, but so it's kind of wrapping up with Mark Sanford, so we can talk about some other things. What's the future hold? What's the eight ball showing for Mark? I mean, there's talk about the first congressional district. That race is still wide open. There's like, 57%? Of likely Republican voters in that first congressional district are undecided per that Club for Growth PAC poll. So, I mean, take or leave it, but Mark Sanford has built-in name ID in the Lowcountry and would definitely make that race interesting, despite there already being, like, what, four people in that race, including Nancy Mace, who's
getting some pretty good... Yes, at least four. I think there might be another one who just filed recently that I saw. Yeah, that would certainly make things very interesting. Yeah. If there was not already enough attention on that first congressional district race, it's obviously already a top Republican target for next year. Joe Cunningham was a huge upset for the Democrats, and they would certainly love to hold on to that seat, and they'll invest a lot of resources there. You know, but in terms of Sanford, Brian Hicks wrote a column on the day he dropped out, our columnist in Charleston, and you know, as he said, don't consider this goodbye.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Sanford has, I think he said, Sanford's shown that if nothing else, he's persistent, or as most South Carolinians say, he just won't go away. he does enjoy, he just enjoys, you know, the gamesmanship of politics.
Well, his message and his understanding of, when we're talking
absolutely.
About fiscal conservatism, I mean, that's something that,
you know, the question that he tried to ask over the course of this campaign was whether or not there is still a serious appetite in the Republican Party of 2019 to address the debt and the deficit, and he hammered it around as much as he could everywhere he went, and, you know, the answer seems to be that there isn't really, or at least that has significantly dropped on the priority list of concerns for the party. Mm-hmm. You know, we are now at, what, $23+ trillion of debt, which is significantly higher than when the Trump administration began. Mm-hmm. So that does not seem to be changing anytime soon.
And I think even if it was going to be a long shot of him talking about the debt, I don't give him credit here, with impeachment, and all of that kind of swirling around cable news, it's hard to get any sort of other subject area into the prime time. Mm-hmm. So for his credit, he tried.
Yeah. He had that big check.
Right.
You know, at Silver Elephant, for example, at the South Carolina Republican Party fundraiser, I talked to several of Mark Sanford's, you know, people who described themselves as friends of his, who still said there is no way they would ever vote for him against Trump. And they said, yeah, we care about the deficit, we care about the debt, but, you know, right now we're rallying behind Trump, and that's that.
And to go from deficits to surpluses,
my area.
I was going to say some things that might have some more relevancy to the people of South Carolina here. Lawmakers have about twice the amount that they had this past year for budgeting. So $863 million in recurrence. So that's going to be there every year they can play with for things that, you know, pay raises, teachers, things that need to be funded every year that they commit money to. And then $1 billion in one-time dollars. So
What do they spend it on?
Holy cow, Maya.
I know.
Who's saying what so far at this point? And
Well, there's a word that a lawmaker used to describe that extra money. I'm not allowed to say it. Ask me after today, and I can repeat it for everybody. No, it's a lot of money. And lawmakers, frankly, were very, very surprised when it was announced. They knew that it was going to be a good amount of money. Before the announcement by... Frank Rainwater, the head of Revenue and Fiscal Affairs, lawmakers had suspected that we would see at least $1 billion in new money, which is what we had earlier this year. But they did not anticipate this new money. So you have this huge pile of money plus an election year. It's going to make for election, a lot of good times. I mean, Ways and Means will be a lot of fun, I think.
And it's interesting because, you know, the governor does get first crack at the budget, right? He releases his executive budget. And for the longest time, that was always seen as just okay, good job, whatever. We're the House. We're going to start the budget. We really control it. But last year, we did see a lot of coordination between at least the governor's office and the budget writers where, yeah, he didn't get everything funded to the level that he wanted, but they were working hand in glove to get some of their priorities passed.
And I think we'll see that again this year. Like you mentioned this year that we're in, and the governor only vetoed about, $40.7 million, which was a clear show that a lot of what the governor proposed, which is generally a huge wish list, got into the budget. I think we're going to see a lot more collaboration happening this year, and it probably is two-pronged, but for the lawmakers in the House and the Senate, it probably relieves a lot of stress dealing it on the front end rather than having to collaborate throughout the entire session. I think what you see in the governor's executive budget, which will come out in January, you'll probably see a lot of that trickle down into what the House Ways and Means Committee, which crafts the budget each year, puts into their spending plan.
And I know the one thing we heard from the governor this past week was talking about tax rebates. And I think everyone, a lot of our listeners did get that $50 check. I did. Big money in the House. Is that what everyone drink up? Drink up with those $50.
It's supposed to come by December 2nd, so you can start complaining.
I'm going to go buy a bunch of scratch-offs and put that money right back where it came from. But that was a $70 million tax rebate, so... Think about if you double that $100, you keep going up. People, and if you're getting comfortable, we get that $50 back. That can be somewhat of a little bit of a foot in the door to push that through as the governor wants to do.
But I think we'll see a lot heavier emphasis on tax reform. I mean, that's obviously a very popular talking point during election years, but it seems that in talking with Republican leaders in both the House and the Senate, they would like to see a greater emphasis and actually dealing with tax reform. And as you both know, the House has been talking about it. The Senate's been talking about it for years. I think at this point, given just the flush of new money that they have, especially recurring dollars, there's going to be a greater emphasis on maybe trying to figure that out. Reporters were talking to Senate Majority Leader Shane Massey yesterday after an education hearing, and he put a lot of emphasis on being concerned that the government was growing so much, so fast, and that we really need to direct some of these dollars toward tax relief for taxpayers. So I think we'll see a heavier conversation about that this coming year.
And I know we haven't seen all the budget requests from the Executive Budget Office. Usually, you know, all the agencies submit their requests. We can see them online. Right. Didn't see them up there yet. But I do know, I talked with Molly Spearman, Superintendent of Education, and she told me that I know one thing that she put in for was a 5% pay raise for teachers, which would be about... Yeah. And just to give you an idea about what a 5% pay raise, and she said it would be broken up, you know, it's just blanket 5%, but that would cost $178 million. So just think about that. Like, you start chipping away about what this pie is, this, you know, $1.8 billion pie, which is actually $800 million because that's recurring.
Yeah, and I think on the issue of the teacher pay raises, everyone that I've talked to, from the House Ways and Means Chairman, Merle Smith, to Senate leaders, have said that, look, they kept a promise to teachers. They've talked about raising teacher pay to the national average within the span of 5 years. And every Republican that I've talked to has said, look, we made a promise to teachers. We need to keep that promise. And so there seems to be a list in their list of priorities that teacher pay raises are at least at the top in terms of recurring dollars.
Well, switching gears to former Governor, former U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley, had her new book come out this week, With All Due Respect. She had a book tour coming through the state. We're in Spartanburg. We're at Spartanburg on Thursday, so she's going to be here on Saturday. Can't tell you what she said or what she did up here, but she was up here. So also, that's our disclaimer. If anything changes between Thursday and Tuesday when the podcast drops, that's on you. But Jamie...
Should have been here.
Should have been here. Jamie, your colleague, Jennifer Barry Haas, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, author, had that great book on Mother Emanuel, the shooting, the tragedy there.
Yeah.
She was just up in New York with Haley. Tell us a little bit about what we saw in that interview. She had some revelations specifically about how the tragic shooting at Mother Emanuel really did cause some PTSD for her and getting over that PTSD. And then there are some revelations in that book that we're seeing out in the press.
Yeah, she talks in some detail about, sitting down with her husband and with Swati Patel, who was her chief of staff after that, and breaking down and, having some emotional difficulties after that, and talking about this realization that, PTSD can be something that affects folks even if they are not actually there for the event. The aftermath of it was clearly shocking to her. And she talks about how when she was at the UN, going and seeing a lot of pretty devastating situations elsewhere around the world, that some of those feelings come back. She does certainly open up a lot about that in the interview, and it seems like in the book, it's an interesting side to her, but I think that obviously a lot of folks also are ready, I think, to talk about the political ramifications of all of this.
And again, kind of going back to that, she did attend all nine of those funerals and hearing and seeing all that stuff. It was pretty traumatic times too, but yeah, shocking revelations, quotes in that book about her talking to Rex Tillerson and John Kelly, the White House Chief of Staff, both Secretary of State, White House Chief of Staff, like about them trying to get her on their side to kind of undermine the president, to save the country. And she says, they talked to her and she tries to explain their rationale and says, it was their decisions, not the president's, that were in the best interest of America, she said. The president didn't know what he was doing, Tillerson went on to tell me, that the reason he resisted the president's decisions was because if he didn't, people would die. I mean, we see some pretty tough talk here. Mm-hmm. She also talks about how she worked with the president, saying they didn't always see eye to eye. Sometimes she called him privately to discuss matters. We know that happened after the Charlottesville incident, bringing it back to Mother Emanuel and race relations there. But she said President Trump and I understood each other. And what we're hearing in some of the press is that I think there was some jealousy between Tillerson and Haley and her access to the president. So it was interesting to see that kind of be played out recently.
Yeah, I mean, it has been striking watching the rollout of this book and the interviews that she's done, because the position that she had staked out coming out of her position at the UN was that she was one of the few Trump administration officials who had emerged
unscathed.
Right.
Yeah. On her own terms.
And in fact, potentially even in a better political position than she was when she got there. And she had kind of straddled this line of being, in Trump's good graces, mm-hmm. while also having, some ties to the sort of more establishment Republican base that, was there before Trump, and some who don't really like Trump very much. But what she has done with this book release is really kind of signal in a lot more explicit ways that she is fully on Team Trump at this point. And I think that is an interesting, it would suggest that she, who is a pretty savvy political observer, has determined that the future of the Republican Party is still going to be under the umbrella of Trumpism, and that if you're going to have a future after Trump, you are not going to want to be seen as someone who was not on the team during the administration. And the fact that she has decided that, I think, is pretty reflective of where the party seems to be going.
I mean, look, he can be a great asset for some Republicans, right? I mean, we've seen when he came out last year, or was that this year, last year, when Governor McMaster was running against James Smith, and just the thousands of people, right? The thousands of people that he can bring out to a random high school in Casey.
Yeah,
I mean that's a positive if you can get him to do that for you. So he's definitely an asset to some Republicans that are running, and she remains particularly popular nationwide. And probably among
and
the base
it
here.
It seems like she's getting some heat from it, but again, she's walking that line that she's always been doing, that fine line between being a critic and also being a supporter. And I mean, she knows what she needs to do, needs to do to survive.
But she's kind of getting off the fence a little bit at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, she's pretty much suggesting, you know, I'm one of you guys. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, just find that to be an interesting move. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know, they asked her, if you want to find this in the book, it's on the last page, on her future steps. She says, if God has another door for me, he will show me. So that door could be 2024. It could be, when could that door be opening?
Who knows? Well, like, of course, you know, the other thing people have wondered about is if Tim Scott has still left open the door for the possibility of not running in 2022. He has definitely said, if I run in 2022, that'll be my last one. So he'd be gone in 2028. But there's also a possibility that he could decide not to run at some point, and that would create an opening. Potentially, McMaster could even appoint her if he leaves before the end of his term. You know, I was just going to say, in terms of that future, in terms of 2024, I just had a little fun this week watching, you know, I kept refreshing the Amazon bestsellers list because you have Nikki Haley's book, and you have Don Jr.'s book, Triggered. And you have the anonymous book, A Warning About the Trump Administration. It almost felt like, you know, we were watching the 2024 primary play out in advance.
I really need you to find something else in
here. It's a microcosm of reality
There you go. I think last time I checked, she was one spot ahead of Don Jr. So, you know, it's
going
to be...
Well, there's also some worry that, you know, if she's going to be... How relevant she's going to be come 2024. But, I mean, Nikki, we all know if she has any... I mean,
she's
she has one of her big
around.
Talents is that she has a way of still being in the news and doing those things and garnering that attention. And she's on the board of Boeing, and she's still going to be something that if she gets a quote on TV or an interview, I mean, people are going to still pay attention. And again, she has high name ID as well.
And she's one of the few, I think, at this point, like admit cabinet officials that can go on television and talk. She talks frankly about Trump in some respects, but, I mean, is obviously very supportive.
Yeah.
She's not going to discontinue that just because, obviously, she's now out of office and with a book out.
Yeah, and I guess one example that we still do see of her kind of straddling the line, a kind of classic example, is what she's talking about with impeachment, you know, kind of basically saying inappropriate but not impeachable.
Yeah.
So you're kind of having a bit of both sides there on that, and that's a good example of the way she's tried to handle his entire presidency.
Just some other quotes in the story.
Yeah.
History is easy because facts are real. That will come in handy at some point, I'm sure. And then Haley...
Historians here might disagree with that.
And then Haley also gives some coping strategies. Should times get dicey, you can always say almost anything with both strength and dignity if you start by saying with all due respect, which is actually what Savannah Guthrie did the other day in their interview. It was interesting.
Yeah.
And Haley also has a well-timed bless your heart will keep your enemies guessing, as it did in March 2016, as we all saw. So things have really changed.
It did throughout her. You know, I was actually thinking this when you were talking about Governor McMaster and his strong relationship with the legislature, which is notable. And you know, we've also talked about Mark Sanford. Mm-hmm. It's a big departure from the last two predecessors who famously had extremely bad relationships with many lawmakers. In fact, used the legislature oftentimes as a foil, a public foil to kind of fight back against and to show the people that they were, you know, kind of trying to protect their taxpayer dollars and that the legislature was reckless and throwing it all out.
And it's interesting because when Nikki Haley was governor, I mean, she was known for going after members of the legislature pretty aggressively, even on social media.
Mostly on social media.
Right, mostly on social media.
That's all you are as a governor. You got a bully pulpit and that's about it. You know, that's the big
secret
there.
I gotta tell you, Henry McMaster's Facebook page is a lot more boring.
His Twitter is picking up a little bit.
Shout out Zach Pippen. Just so everyone knows, ETV, another local TV outlets reached out for an interview with Haley. She's going to be coming through. Did not hear back. Didn't get anything there. But you can see an interview with me and the former National Security Council Director and U.S. UN Ambassador Susan Rice next week on This Week in South Carolina, because she will also be in town talking about her book. That will air on This Week in South Carolina Friday at 7:30 p.m. She's going to be in Charleston. We'll be talking about her book and all things national security as well. So, and also, a reminder, there's a debate this week. It's going to be MSNBC and The Washington Post. It's from Atlanta.
I was trying to forget.
Wednesday from 9 to 11 p.m. on MSNBC and TheWashingtonPost.com. We're going to have a big recap of that debate for our November 26th episode So that should be some fun stuff to talk about the Thanksgiving table. So, and we have a new person jumping into the race. We got people jumping in, jumping out, but I know there's
going to be... At least one new person.
But we got 10 people on that debate stage, so they'll be ready to go. But that's where we are right now, ladies and gentlemen. Any parting words?
I'm so excited for another 11, 12-person debate. It's going to be... This has been a tough primary to cover. I know we'll talk about it again soon. I look forward to tuning
especially
in.
Especially while we're ramping up for the legislature.
What does everybody say? It's a journey. I'm just here for the ride.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
It's a marathon, not a sprint, yeah.
I feel like we're sprinting this marathon. Yeah. I gotta tell you.
Well, we also want to remind you that thanks to the PBS NewsHour, ETV is bringing you live gavel-to-gavel coverage of the impeachment hearings on your TV and online at scetv.org. Thank you to Jamie and Mayan for making this a memorable event here in Spartanburg. Thank you, Spartanburg.
Thank you.
Spartanburg. What a crowd. Appreciate it.
In our final section, did you know, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics, or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure that lawmakers use when speaking to each other. And did you know that South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney is here, ladies and gentlemen? Wait a minute.
Sorry.
Here we are in the town of his birth.
Wow.
And Russ McKinney is not here. We're left to defend ourselves here in Spartanburg.
He hasn't gotten from whence he came.
He big time us.
Luckily, the people are nice here. We haven't had to get in any fights or anything like that and drop his name to get out of jail. But, he gave the trivia questions to AT and...
What's
going
gunner.
On? Do your best Russ voice for us.
This is State House Week.
Santee Cooper.
Oh, he's here. Santee Cooper.
Yeah, sorry, I'm here and Russ isn't, but this is going to be huge for my IMDb page. Okay, he quizzed me on all of the pronunciation for this, so if I mess up, you can bark me down. I earned that.
Oh, and also don't shout out the answer if you know it. We're going to go through it, then we're going to poll the audience.
We want them to get it wrong. That's the fun part. Is Gavin getting it wrong?
Yes, that's I love getting it wrong.
Amy's all about this trombone.
He's very good at getting it wrong.
Okay, here we go. Spartanburg High School's football team is known as the Vikings. What was it called before the Vikings in the 1970s?
Spartans.
All right. I can't look at Philip.
your choices. A.
He's whispering, yeah.
A. Sharpshooters.
Oof.
B. Warriors. C. Crimson Tide. D.
Harvard.
Lint Heads.
Lint Heads?
Yeah.
God, I'm going to go with D just for the hell of it.
I don't think you can make up D. The Lint Heads?
I mean, sharpshooters, I mean, good thing they got rid of that one.
Yeah, well, the Washington, the bullets used to be,
They almost brought them back, and then Gilbert Arenas brought those guns.
Yeah, that was...
Wow.
He really screwed that.
Gilbert Arenas is my childhood hero, so...
Okay, so A, sharpshooters.
Gilbert Arenas? I love
that. B, Warriors,
which I think is also fun.
C, Crimson Tide.
I'm going to be basic.
It's not Harvard.
D, Lint Heads.
I'm doing Lint Heads.
All right.
That's wild.
I'm doing B.
Or Warriors.
Go Lint Heads.
But, yeah.
The answer is C, Crimson Tide.
Wow.
What?
You guys are pathetic.
Roll Tide.
Wow.
Okay. The Crimson. Okay, thanks, Russ. I mean, AT.
Thank you, Russ.
And thank you, Spartanburg.
I can barely tell the difference between Russ and AT. Yeah. So
striking
similar.
Resemblance, too.
The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on scetv.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV, Fridays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 11:30 a.m. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and southcarolinapublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. Search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, or wherever you find podcasts. Also, be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like friend of the pod, Gigi Holmes. Follow us on Instagram at @scleadpod, and you can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course, our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle, at @scleadpod. We have swag, sticker swag, that is. Send us a direct message on Twitter or Instagram with your address, and we'll send one your way. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scled@scetv.org. South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Post and Courier and the State Newspaper. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in Growler House in Spartanburg on November 14th, 2019. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening.
Secret message. Wilson was a Russian plant spying on Tim the Toolman Taylor and his family.
I don't think so, Tim.
I ain't my eyes, AT. I don't want them to hurt.